All right, let's go.
Yeah, we can see it.
Hey, everybody, welcome to another exciting episode of McMillan and Morrow.
Welcome back.
Nobody applauded. I don't know what's going on. A little applause, people, you know.
We're going to insert that.
Yes, we are. I'm Dr. Sean McMillan. This is my co-host, Rich Morrow.
What up, what up, what up?
And we are back with another set of salacious, scandalous, gossipy stories. I got you listening, don't I? I pulled you in right there. Well, some of these stories might relate to some of that, but a lot of these stories relate to all of us because these stories are about what all of us are capable of.
And the first story isn't even, I guess it stems from what we're capable of, but it shows what technology is capable of because, you know, the direction we're going, technology is starting to take over little by little. And first story is in Arizona today, Doc. According to People, imagine this. There was a mother that was on a trip away from home when she got a call from an unknown number, right? She answers the phone and she hears her daughter's voice crying and sobbing, saying, "Mom, these men have me, they're bad men, help me, help me, help me." Then a man gets on the phone saying, "Put your head back, lie down," and then proceeds to tell her, "This is how it's gonna go. You call the police, you call anybody, I'm gonna pop her so full of drugs, I'm gonna have my way with her, I'm gonna drop her off in Mexico." Literally the threat. As her daughter's voice was heard, you know, pleading in the background, he demanded the ransom. And meanwhile, the mother had another person call her house to ask where her daughter was, and her husband replied that her daughter was upstairs in her room. She hung up and realized that it was a scam. So, long story short, they're using AI technology to clone people's voices because you can do that on different apps with the technology. And they're using it to kidnap and get ransom money from people, you know, by pretending that they've actually kidnapped someone and, you know, are demanding ransom. And that's kind of in line with what we typically talk about on this show and how humans love to take things too far. We can't really help ourselves as a species, it feels like. And this is very dangerous because obviously you look at the cause of this, the root of it, it's because people are, you know, dealing with tough times and taking advantage of these things that are coming about. But I don't know how you even have AI exist in a world without this being a possibility.
Okay. But is there like a...
I mean, the scammers were never caught.
Okay.
So that's what makes it really
tough. But
what's
your question?
My question is, I don't know how... It's just terrifying. I don't even know if I have a question in it. I don't know how we avoid these situations happening with technology becoming more advanced. People are going to find ways to take advantage of everything that we do. And this is one of those examples of, I mean, for a parent, I don't have any kids yet, but I can imagine how my mom would react in this situation. For a parent, that's got to be one of the most scary situations that you could probably be in.
I just had a totally devious thought.
I know you did, probably. Like, some parents might.
My thought was, come get them.
I was going to say, some parents might be like, all right, you can keep them.
I was like, you want them? Come, don't tell me about no ransom, because I'm not paying to get these jokers back.
And I definitely saw that coming from you. But for, you know, like...
You have to pay me to take them back.
But for the parents that are naive... Yeah. And really wouldn't know any better. Some people don't even know AI exists still. So imagine you hear what really does sound like your kid's voice pleading, and you are almost even led to think that they're in harm's way and could potentially even be, somebody could even say that they've already harmed them, you know?
There is something, because another AI story, hold on. So the look I gave him?
Yeah.
Is wearing on my nerves. But... There is, because, and if you have another one, you should probably delete it, because I'm done with the AI. But there is something interesting in this story, and it's what the mother did, and that is she confirmed what she heard. And the wisdom in that, there's so much wisdom in that. You never take information from one source.
Yeah.
You never think because I saw it on Google or YouTube that it has to be true.
That's the truth.
You have to verify the claim and have multiple sources before you act on information.
Don't be lazy.
So the AI voice called, she called home. Right? And what you said?
Where she knew she was supposed to be.
Right. And she found out, no, the little girl's upstairs. And if we would just apply that to every area of our lives. Yeah. Just because somebody says that they love you doesn't mean that they love you. Mm-hmm. People can say LOL and not be laughing. Of course
people
they can
always say LOL.
Of course they can say I love you and not mean it. You have to check and have multiple pieces of evidence, multiple sources for what you're willing to believe. Yeah. It's an amazing time. Mm-hmm. We've almost gone back to right after the Middle Ages mm-hmm. in our capacity for belief.
Yeah.
We believe in things without any rationalization.
No proof, no nothing.
We just believe it. If it shows up on my phone, I believe it.
Yeah.
If it's on a screen, it's got to be true. No, it's not. So everybody watching, let this story, forget about the whole AI. I mean, whatever. We talked about that.
Yeah.
The part of this story that I find interesting is the mother's wisdom.
She used her common sense.
To check and prove that this was the case. And if somebody wants to live their life with you, make them prove it. If somebody wants to have your hand in marriage, make them prove it. You say, Dr. Sean, how can you make somebody prove it? Don't rush into it. Mm-hmm. Don't give in right away. Let time be the thing that teaches you what somebody is about.
And who they are. Yep.
I'm trying to tell you. You want to be my friend? Be my friend when I'm broke.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see how friendly.
Then I know you can handle it.
Friendly you are then.
Mm-hmm. And what do they say? They say, you know, you don't really know someone until you do something they don't like, right?
Not they say that. I say that.
I'm saying that's a quote that I've heard around.
No, you've got that from
me. I've heard it from you, too.
Came from me.
I've heard many people say this quote.
No, because they got it from me.
Okay.
They say.
So if I saw it on TikTok, it was from them.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Yes. But it's true, though. And it's like if you can't love me at my lowest, you can't be there with me when I'm at my highest. Like, that's how I feel about everything. And only time will tell. And that's why it's always been amazing to me, people that rush in relationships. You know them type of people that are dating somebody, and then they get out of a relationship, and you look up a month later, and they are somehow in love with somebody else already. Have you seen that?
Yeah, me. Yeah, I see that. Me. I do that all the time.
Well, to an extent, I actually feel you on that. I have had
don't make me tell
not
people
actually
what you
being
do.
In love with this person where I'm willing to, you know, actually commit and have, you know, these such strong feelings that, like, my life feels like it's almost already, you know, being coexistent with theirs. And it's like, no, like, it takes me time to really develop strong feelings for anybody.
It doesn't take me time at all.
Like, I can have initial strong feelings.
Oh, no.
But I know that that's, you know, more so based off of, you know, that first impression that I got of that person more so than actually knowing them. I've been able to differentiate that because I think growing up and going to school, like in Florida, helped me a lot. There was a lot of attractive people all the time around me. And I was like, caught myself like, damn, I feel like I'm falling in love every day, you know? And I had to kind of check myself and like, look, all of them ain't going to be worthy of me giving them myself. But I did have those feelings initially where it was like almost every time I stepped out the door, it was like, I feel like I could have got married 50 times today. And it's a crazy feeling. But to understand and have the discernment, though, of, you know, checking your temptation and knowing the difference between what's lust and what's actually love is a whole different story.
No one does nosy better than me. Photos.
We found 378 photos.
He couldn't what he do, because I don't know how he found that.
These are years of snooping, okay?
I know you nosy too. Head over to Nosy where you can watch full episodes of The Karamo Show and be nosy with me.
Right. And what is the difference, according to you, between lust and love?
Well, I feel like love is when you're willing to do and care for others in the same way that you would, you know, care for yourself, you know?
And what is lust?
Lust is, I feel like, all surface level. It's the shell. You like the shell. You know, you like what you see. You might want to test drive the car, but you don't really know if you want to buy it yet. And, you know, love is one of those things you can't... You, it's hard to even describe to me because love is so unique and such a higher, you know, degree of everything than anything else. How do you describe love personally? I'm curious to know your definition.
Well, it's actually, it's a very simple formula. Very simple formula. Lust is I want you.
Mm-hmm.
Love is I've decided you have something that I cannot live without.
Okay, I'm glad you didn't say need because I know you weren't going to say that.
No.
Yeah.
Well.
But there are people that are in love to a point where they, whether it's true or not is wholly, totally up for debate, but you see when people venture into the feeling of that they need someone, you know, and I've even had
Well, there's nothing, like I'm pushing back, and that's why you got the reaction from me that you got.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with needing someone. We all need someone. Let's not be crazy.
We're talking about in that romantic capacity.
And in that romantic capacity, there's nothing wrong with needing someone.
Okay.
Or needing
You're a hopeless romantic.
Absolutely. But
he didn't even remotely try to question that.
No, because there's nothing wrong with that.
I love it.
It becomes a problem.
Yeah.
When your entire identity is built around your connection to the person.
It's rooted in that.
I may need you, but I'm not defined by you. Those are two very different things.
I
need your joy. I need your spirit. I need your sex.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all that.
So you don't know if that's more of a want than a need?
Listen, I'm not going to quibble in the language.
I'm
that
just
far.
Curious. I'm curious.
No, I'm avoiding that because that's going to take us into something else.
A whole other rabbit hole.
Yeah. So
I do need it.
Your distinction is philosophically valid.
Okay.
But I'm going to jettison it, put it aside.
Stay away from there.
Yeah, because it's going to take me into
a deep rabbit hole. Yeah,
it's an analytic rabbit hole.
Okay.
Whether it's want or need,
mm-hmm.
I'm saying there's nothing wrong with that.
I agree. Okay.
And as a human being, you do yourself a favor and to show the courage to admit it.
Mm.
A part of the reason why most men mess up relationships is because we can't admit that we want or need somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And you have somebody willing to give you the world, stand with you, fight with you, love you, and you can't even admit that this is the thing you need and want.
And do you think lust gets in the way of that because you want so many other things too?
Well, yes and no.
It feels like a double-edged sword, don't it?
Yes and no.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying yes and no because lust is not problematic of itself. There's nothing wrong with desire. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
But when pleasure becomes the principal aim and the focus, then that person, for various reasons, is engaging not in relationship, but in sort of a selfish self-fulfillment.
It's more of a relationship with the lust than it is with
the
person.
Yeah, not with the person.
Yeah.
Your relationship is with pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying, let me just say something.
That's profound, by the way, too. That's going to go over a lot of people's heads, I feel like.
Well, maybe. Maybe not, because you people are smart. I'm saying, and some people may disagree with this, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
If your relationship is with pleasure,
mm-hmm.
and you like pleasure, you're not really into the day-to-day sort of person thing, then my thing is just be honest.
Yeah, that's all it is.
Just tell people. I like.
You got to be honest with yourself first before you're going to be able to be honest with other people. A lot of people aren't honest with themselves about that.
That too.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever the process of honesty is, have it.
Yeah.
And just tell people, look, I'm just here to make your eyes roll up in the back.
Here for a good time, not a long time.
Yeah, and you'd be surprised at how many people who also into the same thing, as opposed to lying to somebody, making somebody believe we're going to have a relationship when the truth of the matter is all we're going to have is sex.
Yeah. So then that brings me to the question, if you understand that so much, how do you think you became a hopeless romantic?
Because I was left in a garbage can.
You going to let that be your story?
No.
You feel like that's also
It sounds facetious, but
it's actually really.
It's very true.
I got you.
When you've been rejected at a formidable stage of your life, and you know that story, then connection takes on a very different proposition and value to you.
That makes sense.
So abandonment produced in me the affirmation of love. So when I see it, I admire it.
Mm.
When I see people who can hold on to each other,
and never let go.
Oh, it's amazing to me.
Me too.
Because I put a disproportionate value on it.
And this goes about what we were talking about before. You can't understand the highest levels of anything without understanding some of the lowest levels of that adversely. So to know what real love is on that level, you have to somewhat know what the lack of that really is. And that could be grief, that could be pain, that could be a bunch of different things.
Yes and no.
Do you think that you can know what the extreme of one thing is without the other?
There are many paths.
But I'm asking, do you think it's possible?
Of course, I just said there are many paths to love. I don't think you have to not have it to know it.
Okay.
Some people can grow up in wonderful families.
Absolutely.
With parents that love them and siblings. Mm-hmm. And they turn into wonderful people love.
Because they've been surrounded by it. I agree.
Whereas someone like me, mm-hmm. right, you know, I didn't have that.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. But I still arrived at the same place.
You did.
Because there are many paths mm-hmm. to the same place.
Yeah.
Some come by pain, some come by joy. Mm-hmm. Some come by wholeness, some get there because they were broken.
So, question. Love, obviously, subjective term to a lot of people. Love means something different to everybody. Do you feel that the love that you develop coming from the path that you came is actually the same love that somebody who doesn't know what the adverse feeling of that really feels like, because you appreciate that love in a different way now.
Right.
Because you know what it's like not to have it. To somebody that's always had it, I don't know if you can define them the same way because of the character traits that you develop along the way of getting there, because of the path that you took, or if, you know, their idea of love may be different because they've only seen it in one way.
Well, you just said something that is actually very interesting, and that is, the journey to love produces different things in different people.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very profound point, because love by way of suffering
mm-hmm.
gives you a certain set of things.
It's very different.
And love by way of joy gives you something else.
Just hearing the word joy makes me feel good.
Now, I can't say which one is better.
There's no...
But what I can say is that each one of them comes to us because they best suit our journeys.
Mm-hmm.
I needed love by way of suffering to be this that sits in this chair.
Mm-hmm.
And other people may need love by way of joy.
Yeah. Whereas your suffering could have destroyed somebody.
So we get what we need.
Yeah.
And I'm a fundamental believer that if you didn't have it, it's because you didn't need it.
Mm.
And instead of being mad about what you didn't get, just accept the fact that somebody knew that you could live without it. And you'll be all right.
That is powerful. Whew. Whew. I'm supposed to go to a break, but I don't even want to relish in that one for a second. I don't want to end this conversation.
You're going to get fired. You better go to break.
All right.
And they can pay these bills.
We need to pay our bills. So we'll be right back. Make sure that you tap into a Spotify, Apple Music, whatever you like listening and watching things on. We are there, and we will be right back.
So you're gonna start with the snooze one?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, start with that.
Let me know when you're ready.
I am ready.
What starting on my close up, Aaron?
Yeah. Unless you guys would prefer to start with the wide.
Oh no, this is fine.
Yeah. We usually come in with you talking
close up. Okay, welcome back. I'm curious to know how you're going to feel about this one, which I always am curious to know how you're going to feel about everyone, so shouldn't be surprising. But do you hit snooze every morning when you wake up?
Yep.
You do? How many times? Just once?
No. Way more than once. Depends on the morning, but yeah, no, at least.
You're not one of them people that'll set like 5 alarms back to back to back to back to back.
No, depends on if I got to catch a plane.
How important getting up is.
If I got to catch a plane and I didn't go to sleep early enough, I'm setting like 4 alarms.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm the kind of person, I just hit snooze over and over again, and I'll wake up every 10 minutes if I got to, but I still find a way to go back to sleep. According to the LAD Bible, the advice against hitting the snooze button on your alarm in the morning has a scientific basis known as sleep inertia. Did you know that? Sleep inertia,
no.
You ever heard that term?
No.
So a sleep expert explains that when you drift back into sleep after waking up, your brain starts a sleep cycle that takes 75 to 90 minutes to complete. So when the alarm goes off again after a short snooze, you might be interrupting your deep sleep phase, you know, for the first time when you wake up, leading to that groggy, you know, kind of exhausted feeling where you're kind of like, oh, I'm in a fog. And it takes your brain about 4 hours to fully recover from sleep inertia. So, you know, they're arguing that instead of snoozing, it's recommended to get up when the alarm rings to avoid disrupting your sleep cycles. Because, you know, there's different phases of sleep that you go into, you know, REM being the one where
you're getting up is interrupting my sleep.
It's ending your sleep.
Yeah.
And, but it, they say that that can help with the feeling. Do you ever feel groggy throughout your day, though?
No.
No? Okay. Then you're probably getting enough sleep. But to people like me who never do, like, I know if I snooze too much sometimes, like this morning, for example, I probably hit the snooze button 2 or 3 times.
So did I. I hit it like 4.
Yeah, which is about the average if I don't have a super duper hard, you know, out that I need, you know? But I've also noticed that, like, even times where I'm excited, say I got something I'm super excited, not that I wasn't excited about getting up this morning, but say I have something that I've been waiting for a long time, and I had a hard time sleeping, and this is even on little sleep. When I jump straight out of bed, and I just get moving, and I get that motor going, I do tend to have more energy, I feel like, at least in the initial start of my day. I might be groggy later on, but I don't think that that extra 10, 20, 30 minutes that I spend snoozing really does have a huge impact on my day.
Okay, so let's bottom line this. Do you believe the research that they're purporting or not?
To an extent. Because I do feel that it starts my mornings off better. But I don't know if me snoozing anyway really does have a big factor on my day, because I'm kind of groggy regardless. You know, at some point, once I get tired.
I don't know. I mean, yeah. I'm not, I have no proficiency in sleep.
No, you sleep well. Do you sleep usually about the same times every night?
Depends. Like, I've been going to bed really late lately.
Have you? And it doesn't affect you the next day?
Like, really late.
Like, real late.
Like, 3, 4 in the morning.
And what time do you wake up?
7.
So, on 3, 4 hours of sleep versus 7 to 8, how do you feel? Same?
Mostly.
Really?
Mostly. I may get a little tired, but I'm not, like, dog tired.
You know what's funny that just hit me, and you're going to laugh about this?
What?
I'm way more tired when I'm broke.
Way more tired when I'm broke. See there?
Like,
there it is.
Depending on how I feel, it's not just financial, but about the state of my life, usually dictates how I feel when I wake up and I, you know.
So when you're more financially secure, you're ready.
I'll be excited for, like, I'll be ready to go take over the world every day. I can get up. I damn near don't have to sleep.
But you shouldn't give money that much power.
I shouldn't, but that is chemically how I feel. And whether.
But it's not chemical.
That's how I feel on the inside.
How you feel is irrelevant. It's not chemical. It's just what you believe. It's how you think about it.
So then how do you answer genuinely yawning throughout your day, having the same things that you may be doing if you had, you know,
it's called
a different situation?
Depression.
It's all mental. It's called depression.
There's a word for it. There's a word for it, son.
All right, I'm depressed. It's called
depression.
But it's funny, though, because I've actually noticed it over the years, though. I'm like, damn, like, I've had times, Doc, where, you know, you go from having $50 in your account and then you look back and you're like, oh, I got a few grand in here all of a sudden.
You get
my
energy,
mood
get
instantly.
Energy.
The dopamine from that is like.
Yeah, because $5
sex
in your account will depress you.
Yeah, you're right.
And you get sleepy like, I can't go nowhere.
I can't eat nothing.
I can't afford nothing. Yeah, it's depression.
And I don't want to laugh at it, but
you've been depressed.
I've been depressed a lot.
Yeah.
So for me, it's crazy because I'm such a happy person full of life that wants to enjoy every day of life, you know? And You making it very clear to me that it's depression.
Why are you laughing? I'm talking about depression. He breaks out laughing, people. Isn't that the weirdest thing ever? The topic because is I'm depression. He's admitting his own depression while he giggles.
Because I actually, you know, I never would want that to, you know, define me or own me. But it's crazy how strong and how real that is, though. Like, you literally have a hard time getting through each day when you don't feel good about yourself and the state of your life. Yeah. And, you know, life, I just feel lighter when I got some zeros next to my bank account. And
yeah, okay, but let's have a session.
Yeah, I love this.
I'm about this because I just feel like if I leave this like this,
it's so
funny. Stop. Stop. We're not doing the show now, okay? We're actually going to have a session, okay?
Just
stay with me. Do you know why you feel better when you have money?
Because I'm broke. Money. No, I'm kidding.
No, I'm about to tell you why.
All right, let's go.
It's because security is something you value.
If I didn't value it, I wouldn't care.
No. If you didn't value it, you wouldn't have the response.
Well, I wouldn't have the feelings on me.
Yeah. Okay. So when you feel that way, you have to have other things when you don't have money that make you feel secure.
Yeah.
Do you know what those things are?
Food, shelter, and love around me. Those are the top three to me.
So when you go into that valley,
go to that.
Go to those other things.
Which and I feel like.
They may not prevent the depression. But
they show the hell to which they do.
He giggles at everything. And I'm trying to be serious here.
I know. I'm laughing at myself.
What they will do is pull you out quicker.
Yeah.
So they won't stop you from going in, but they'll get you out sooner.
Mm-hmm.
So the moment you start feeling like, I don't feel like getting out of bed, that's when you know, okay, I need
to call a friend or somebody or something. Yeah. I got you. And that's good advice, I think, for anybody. I think we all deal with, you know, different things.
Now you see how you obfuscated right there?
I did. Because I want to help other people learn from this. I don't want it to just be about
me. We're not dealing with them or not. They're watching. You're in the moment.
Well, learn from me, y'all.
See,
okay.
Obfuscating
learn
more.
Learn from me. I'm going to take this on. I'm going to own this. I'm going to own my, you know, mental health state right now. And how that is shifted through, you know, the different circumstances that I go under. I get it. And the reason why I laugh and that I'm tickled by it is because there's been so many times in my life where I didn't know. And I just let it kind of be something that kind of drives my life at times. And you don't know how long those periods last. You really don't. Like, when you're dealing with real depression, it's one of those situations where, just like this alarm, like, you just want to keep hitting snooze over and over and over again until it almost just does it on its own. You know, I wake up, I want to go right back to sleep. Mm-hmm. You know, I do something, I want to go just lay down.
That's depression.
And it's crazy, though, because I know my spirit. I know who I am. I know how much life I have in me and how much love I always want to share every day. And even leaning on friends, leaning on, you know, family, you know, understanding the gratitude of, okay, at least I have a roof over my head. At least I'm able to feed myself today. Even if it's not by your own dollar. Mm. The blessing in that is that, you know, like you said, was I don't know if that was this episode or the episode before, but it's like, how big of a blessing is it to know that somebody knew you didn't need that and you would survive and you're going to be all right? And I look at it now as, you know, a building of character and all kinds of things. I got this quote that I started saying recently. You can't be the main character without a story to tell. And, you know, that goes in so many different ways because a lot of people want the end results of success and things like we talk about without having the journey.
But stop for a second. Stop for a second because you're losing me.
No, I get it.
Let's bring this back to you.
I get it. And this is about me still.
Let me finish.
Go ahead.
My sentence.
Go ahead.
Okay?
Go ahead.
Because where I'm going with this ultimately is you put too much value on security.
Who don't want to be safe?
Not finish my statement.
Okay, go ahead.
Too much value on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes too valuable if the loss of it would throw you into depression. The way you manage it is to say, we had this conversation before, mm-hmm. the difference between being uncomfortable
and desperate
and being in, we the, right, we said being desperate, but being in danger is danger. What I want to yeah, use
okay.
today.
Okay.
So when you lose security, you have mm-hmm. to ask yourself, am I in danger or am I just uncomfortable?
When you're in the state, that's a very tough question to answer.
Of course it is. But that's if it was easy, everybody
but
would
I'm
do
wondering,
it.
I'm wondering, though, I'm only saying that because in those situations, how can we make the answer easy?
I'm going to help you if you let me finish
okay,
up.
Okay,
all
okay,
right.
Okay, go ahead.
When you're in those situations, are you butt naked?
Are Sometimes, you, are, maybe.
Are you homeless?
I have been.
You can't help somebody, folks, who don't want help.
I do.
Let's try it again.
I get that this is just
first, stop being flippant.
I'm not.
You are. Stop being flippant. Stop being flippant. So when you're in those situations,
uh-huh.
you are not butt-ass naked. You are not homeless.
Okay.
You are not starving to the place where you die. That's not where you are.
Yeah, I haven't died yet.
You are at risk.
Yeah.
But you are not at danger.
Yeah, okay.
And that is the difference between not allowing the loss of security to drive you into a depression
yeah.
that just throws your life out of whack.
Mm-hmm.
See, look, I've been broken in you.
Have you? No, I'm kidding.
No. Yeah, yeah. Yes, I
yeah,
have.
Yeah.
I've been broken in you.
Okay.
With a lot less to work with.
Uh-huh.
The difference is I don't value security.
Yeah.
So the loss of it doesn't throw me into craziness.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So other things will,
yeah.
but not that.
Mm-hmm.
So my point is only when you have a different relationship with security,
mm-hmm.
you'll respond to it differently when you lose it.
You're right.
Anything, the loss of that thing interrupts your life.
Yeah.
Where you just lose your equilibrium,
yeah, equilibrium,
you have too much of an attachment to it.
Yeah, you're right. And that's actually a good way. And I feel like you saying the too much of an attachment to it is really what it is. And I think that me personally, because I'm going to stop generalizing this, even though I want to help everybody else out there learn from this, I'm not going to generalize it. I'm going to say me personally, something along the course of my life has made me value security more than I feel like maybe other people do as much. And
own it. Has made me value it more than I should. Say
it
that.
Has made me value it more than I should. But should is a shame word because it's like shame on me for valuing it so much. It's like, no, something happened that
who
caused
made,
this.
Who made should a shame word?
That's what I use in acting. Like, because a lot of times when people
Aaron,
say
when did
should,
that happen? Who took the vote?
To
no.
me, should is a shame word because it's like, you know, when you say should about something
should,
almost,
in this
it's
case,
almost like, oh,
no.
you shame on you for not knowing better or
no.
doing better and not letting this happen because it should be this way. No, that's how when I hear the word no. should, it almost has shame attached to it to me because the only times that I've ever used it is when I'm almost feeling that way. But I don't know if that's necessarily the case. That's just how I've
No, it's just about being accountable
yeah.
for what we feel
mm-hmm.
and how that's creating what's happening to us.
So it's not a should based off of someone else. It's a should based off of
yeah.
yourself, your
so,
own opinion.
So if I have a greater attachment to security mm-hmm. than I should, it doesn't mean that I should be ashamed of that. It means mm-hmm. that I'm owning the fact that I'm the one
mm-hmm.
that is valuing this too much.
Yeah.
Which means that what? I'm the one who can change it.
Mm-hmm. Great. That's a great point.
Boy, I could listen, if I was your counselor, I'd make you pay me a lot.
No, I wouldn't, because I ain't got enough to pay you that much.
Wear me out.
But no,
it would take me 13 sessions to get him to stop giggling.
Nah, I was going to be more than that, probably. That's part of me, though. I laugh at even when I've been in those tough situations, the one thing I'm grateful for is that I've always been able to have the gift of laughter and joy and finding something humorous out of the situation. Even when I've been at my lowest, like, you would be surprised. I've had moments where me and my best friend have laughed sitting in our car homeless together. Like,
mm-hmm.
like this is crazy. We actually, are in this situation.
Tyler wants you to move on.
No. I actually have a question.
What's up?
do you think laughter is a defense mechanism?
I was just about to say.
I've been told that, and I do the same thing.
It's a defense mechanism.
And I actually had to work on that with acting because in situations where you're put in situations where you want to be, you know, almost defensive sometimes.
Oh, can I tell a story? Go ahead. I'm trying to cut you up. Forgive me.
Yeah, you're good.
This is a story. No, it's a story about us.
Yeah, yeah.
This, so Aaron and Tyler don't know this. So when Rich and I first met, we met at a gym.
Yeah.
And, you know, blah, blah, blah. And we would have conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And he would just start laughing. So the first couple of times, you know, I'm like, okay, well, he's just jolly, you know. And then like 19 conversations in, we're talking about something, he's just laughing. And to the point where I just said, what the hell are you always laughing at?
Yeah, remember that? Yeah, I do remember.
Remember that conversation?
I do.
I couldn't get it.
Yeah.
I was like, there's nothing funny in this moment. And that's when I learned what you just said, Tyler. I'm about that laughing is a defense mechanism for him. That he laughs when he's uncomfortable.
And I laugh when I actually find something funny. I find a lot of things humor. I have a dark humor too. But
well, that too.
Yeah, at the same time.
And so do you, by the way.
I laugh at things I should know.
But that's the thing I've started to learn through my practice with, you know, acting in the craft was, okay, I saw it in other people before I realized it in myself when my coach was telling me. I was like, wow, this person laughs every time they're uncomfortable. She goes, you do the same thing. And I'm like, okay, because I laugh so much, I didn't realize when those times actually were.
Okay. So Aaron, what do you do when you're uncomfortable? Are you aware, self-aware?
Yeah.
What do you do?
I'm aware of it. I probably am. I guess I manage the situation. I manage what the situation is that's making me uncomfortable. I mean, sometimes I might speak up about it, or sometimes it might just make me be quiet or something.
No, what I'm asking is, I'm asking a slightly different question. I'm asking because
Is there a behavior?
Yeah, is there a behavior that you sort of use to manage your discomfort?
Sure, if I have one, I would have to ask somebody else who
watches. Some people scratch their head. Right. Some people may, you know, be, you know, restless where they, you know, are constantly moving. Their leg may be tapping.
Mm-hmm.
They may, you know, there's a lot of different things that are telling signs of it. But until you know what yours is, you don't really know if it's a defense mechanism or not yet. And that was where I got the revelation from my coach. Like, okay, now I get to start to find out when that is, because I do laugh a lot, but sometimes I'm laughing because it is actually funny to me. And I'm like, I may be laughing about something in my head that nobody else is even thinking about. And that's
it can be part of it as well.
And that's what I was saying.
And it can be both at the same time.
You got to learn yourself.
What's your thing that you do to mitigate and manage discomfort?
Well, to manage discomfort, well, like he said, I do the same thing where I'll either overgeneralize or I'll laugh, you know, to kind of bring the mood up, especially if we're hitting on stuff that, you know, is, you know, deeper or something that makes me slightly uncomfortable. Though I typically don't run away from uncomfortable conversations. There's always time and place. Like, sometimes I can turn it off, but I have to be reminded that, you know, I'm doing it. You know, that's why my mentors, those are the ones who tell me, like, no, this is serious.
Yeah, yeah. Which is what we just went through.
That's why I'm laughing. I'm like,
yeah, because we just went through that.
Because,
you know, my great love for you, it's uncomfortable for me to see you uncomfortable. But in that moment.
I love that, though.
But in that moment, I was committed.
To making sure
you understood you don't have to feel that way.
Yeah.
Right, you don't have to have the same.
There's no shame attached to
it
or anything.
But what we just modeled is what most people don't know how to do. Is how to be with someone in the moment, trying to give them something, they not receiving it readily, but not being turned off by that.
And not being turned, and still being able to deliver that message.
And to say ultimately, my commitment is to you where you are. Right? Yeah. And even if you're not ready in this moment, I'm not going to respond to whatever disappointment I may feel about that, because I'm not trying to be successful. I'm just trying to bless you. And most people don't know how to do that. Most people in that moment, well, if you don't want to take what I got to say, you know what I mean?
I ain't going to say nothing else.
For real, gang. I got that from TikTok. Gangy. You know, they you know, the hell with you.
Yeah.
But love, we go back to where we started. Yeah. Love will do things that lust won't do. When lust and like have walked away, love sits down. When lust says, I didn't come here for all that.
Yeah.
Love says, this is exactly why I showed up.
Mm-hmm. And that's why
that's
love
the difference.
Is there. Yeah, through it all, the ups, the downs,
that's
everything.
The difference. Love is willing to work.
Love is constant.
Willing to sacrifice. Lust says, make my eyes roll up in the back of my head and make my toes curl
up. So does that make lust conditional and love unconditional? Real love?
And you're getting down in the weeds because love asking. Because love may not be love may not have conditions, but it always has reasons. You can never love nobody without a God doesn't love you without a reason. Love has to have reasons because when the person when the person's getting on your nerve, you need to tap into the reason. A reason is not a condition. Mm. A condition is you do this and I do that. If you don't do this, I won't do that.
Yeah.
That's a condition. Mm-hmm. A reason says, I love you because. And if you have a because, you'll be all right. It's people who try to love people without a reason that get in trouble. Or the reasons are shallow. I love your big ass. I love your big breast. I love your big penis.
Something, yeah.
That's not a sufficient reason. So that can't be what love is really doing.
No. That sounds more like lust.
No, but to say that I love you because your brightness saved me.
Yeah.
I love you because when you came into my life, you empowered me to see myself differently.
Yeah, those are real.
Listen, that's a reason. In the same way a parent says, I love you because your mama don't love you for no reason.
No.
If you were some other random, if you were Aaron, let me be nice to Aaron because I got in trouble for saying things. Aaron, we love you. But you know what I'm saying? If you were some random child, it's because you're her child. Mm. You came out of her body. She has a reason.
She carried me.
She has a reason. Yeah. And love in the presence of reasons tends to survive.
And on that note, we're going to go to break.
Want the best of Maury? Kevin, you are not.
Want the best of the Steve Wilkos Show? Would you take Dave back if you left Katie?
Want the best of Jerry Springer?
Just download Nosy on your mobile device or stream it on Pluto TV, Samsung TV, or the Roku channel. Until next time, America.
You're like, attitude.
You're like a trigger.
That one right there.
You just like to trigger me.
That's my job on this show. If I don't trigger you, we don't get half the laughs we get.
The triggering. All right.
Oh my God. Well, you joked. That was a joke. That was a joke.
Just don't read a headline on this one.
Okay. So
we're back.
Welcome back. We got an interesting little topic going on here that's been happening in the last few years about people trying to open doors on planes mid-flight, okay?
Yeah.
So I don't know what you would do in that situation, but that got to be one of my biggest fears. I'm holding on to my damn seat. I ain't worried about beating nobody up with the
I'm going to try to get you before you open the door.
You're going to figure out they ain't got no parachutes probably for the passengers on regular commercial flights or nothing. Why don't they have that under your seat, first of all?
That's a great question.
They put goddamn. Have you ever seen the little thing?
But
then
people don't really know how to use parachutes. So they wind up dying anyway.
People don't know how to use that thing. You got to blow up this float in the ocean with either the life jacket that they give you. Have you ever seen that life jacket? I got friends that steal them every flight they get on.
What kind of friends do you have?
White ones.
Wow. Wow. And you, hold on. Wait. And I'm usually doing the racial on this show. Woo!
Those are my white friends.
Tyler,
the Florida ones. The Florida white.
Say to that? Tyler's white.
I was sitting by the passenger door. I was on the, flight in. I was thinking about it. I'm like, what would it take? Because all you got to do is just pull it. You can do it while sitting there.
Do you really think that?
I think he about said, what would it take? Involved.
And he clearly sees pull handle in the door.
It's more of like how many barriers are between me and just sinking this plane? Is it really just pulling this lever?
But
not that I would ever do it.
No. Yeah, make that clear.
Let's hope not.
But there was a flight where this happened, right?
Well, here
there is.
Let's just go to this
Let's
video.
Go to the video. Right, I'm going to show you. There's a video.
Yeah. So somebody pulled the
emergency exit,
and they're flying with the damn door open.
And they had to land the plane that way with the cabin pressure and everything changed.
Can you imagine sitting in that row?
Oh, no.
Can you imagine all the air? Now, here's what I heard. I heard that the reason the plane didn't go, the reason the door was able to open was because they were low enough for the cabin pressure to allow it
to
happen.
So if you're high enough, you might not even open, huh?
Well, if it, if the plane's at 30,000 feet, it won't, you can't open the door. The cabin pressure won't allow it. So it's not like...
35,000 feet, yeah.
Yeah. Well, are you correcting my altitude or my...
No.
Okay. So my point is, it's not like you can just open the door
at 35,000
feet. Or okay. There's a certain, like, whatever it is, altitude beyond which you can't do it, but beneath which you can.
So they said it was only 700 feet above ground when it happened. So that probably is why he was able to do it.
Right,
because,
right.
You know, of that. But what would you do in that situation?
Pray, I mean, speak in tongues, call on the blood. I would act like an old black mother in church. I would roll around on the floor and tell the devil no.
So I'm gonna be screaming at the top
of your lungs. I'm gonna put aside all that philosophy.
All of that.
The hell with Plato, the hell with Nietzsche, Kierkegaard, Bertrand Russell, Wittgenstein. Come on here.
You praying to whoever can land
the hell with Husserl.
Yeah.
Huh? Sartre, Camus can all kiss my ass. Rorty. As in Richard Niebuhr, Reinhold Niebuhr, Richard Niebuhr, Paul Tillich.
They all of them at that point.
Michel Foucault can take a leap off a high building. When you open the door of the plane, I'm going to Jesus. The blood.
No, honestly, though. Like,
huh?
Have you ever been on planes where people have started praying, though, because of the...
Oh, problems? I got a story.
Uh-oh, here we go. Let's go. Let's go.
Listen up, Tyler. What are you about to say?
No.
Okay.
I'm curious.
So, don't get mad at me because this happened in Africa.
Okay.
All right. Okay. I'm just saying. So, we're flying from South Africa to Zimbabwe.
Mm-hmm.
And
what a flight, first of all. That's a slight flex.
Yeah.
First of all,
how's that a flex, people?
Slight flex.
Anyway, so we get on the plane, and we're on Air something, Air Zimbabwe or Air South Africa. Mm-hmm. So the plane is about to land, and it touches the ground and takes off again.
Oh, it bounced and...
And it's none but Africans on the plane.
Yeah.
Tyler, none of your people are there. And the Africans went ham.
They went crazy. Oh,
la. I mean, they went crazy.
They knew something was wrong.
No, it gets worse.
Oh, they felt like
the plane circles and does it again. Touches the ground.
And comes back up. Was this a little plane?
No, this was like a regular...
Like a commercial flight.
Now I'm nervous.
I would have been real nervous.
When I tell you the Africans went into full-blown worship...
It was for real.
They called on Umvaling Haki. Umfulumfulum. Those are real names for God, by the way. They called Modiri and Modifi.
Yeah, they was...
They went into full African worship.
So you was really scared.
And I joined with them.
You was like,
you hear me? They were speaking Kiswahili, and I was speaking in tongues. I was speaking in the Holy Ghost. You hear me? I was like, what the hell is going on?
Like, if they praying like that, I need to be praying like that.
What is going on? So the pilot finally comes on, and he says, oh, we are so sorry. There was a plane in the runway. We could not land. We had to take off twice. We're going to try it again. Listen. This is a true story.
Oh,
so he makes a third pass, doesn't even try to land. Then he makes now I'm questioning the pilot.
I'm like, what is going on?
I'm like, Jesus. No, this is the actual prayer. You know that I work for you, right?
Yeah.
You know you can't let me die on this plane.
You can't let me die on this
plane. Oh, here's the best part of the story. I was on the plane with Jesse Jackson, the Reverend Jesse Jackson, and I thought to myself, if I die on this plane,
Jesse Jackson gonna be the
he's the only person they're gonna care about. He's the only person they're gonna care about. They can care less that I died on this plane. You're gonna be like, Jesse Jackson Sr. dies
with 68.
with 200 other passengers. I was like, Lord,
I can't go out like that.
Lord,
you got both of me to that.
Sweet little baby Jesus, you cannot let me die an irrelevant passenger on the plane with Jesse Jackson. So, they circle one more time, and then he lands, and we had a praise break.
I bet y'all do.
Man, you know how they say keep your seatbelt on?
Everybody was out.
And the Africans came by that damn seatbelt. They were in there dancing, shouting, and I was right with them.
I wish this was on video.
I did my two-step.
Oh, man.
Listen, when you think you're about to die, you don't give a damn about decorum.
About nothing.
Oh, that's good.
About decorum.
You don't care about decorum when you think you're about to die.
No, man. Ooh, that is hilarious. That beat my story I was going to tell, for sure.
Listen.
That is hilarious. Oh, my goodness.
I almost died in Zimbabwe.
With Jesse.
With Jesse. Oh, man. Don't call him Jesse. Reverend Jackson.
Reverend Jackson.
A little respect for that
Jesse
man.
Jesse Jackson. I got a lot of respect for Jesse.
Yeah.
But, man, it would have just been a headline and some passengers.
We need a break after that.
Man, we need to end the episode after that because I think we're at the end of it. But yeah, my whole thing for that was I was curious if you've been on those flights where people start praying because it is traumatizing. It's happened to me on a flight with my teammates in college and I thought it was over. That turbulence can get real up there. And that wasn't even turbulence. He just kept on
laying. Listen. Anyway, thank you for tuning in, everybody. We will see you next time. On McMillan and Morrow.
Think I lost some weight today laughing. Man. Make sure you catch us on Spotify, Apple Music, all of the streaming platforms. You know, every Thursday we hear Fox Soul.
Yeah. See you next time, people.
Until
next
time.
The content on McMillan and Morrow is provided as commentary on news and current events for entertainment purposes.